Well, I'd like to introduce our speaker this morning. Our speaker is Professor Karen Riddle. She's a University of Wisconsin Assistant Professor of Journalism and Mass Communication, and she has her PhD from the University of California, Santa Barbara. Her research focuses on the psychology of media effects, and she's an expert on the effects of exposure to media violence with a focus on children's reactions. Most recently, she's been studying children's fear responses to media violence, including violence in the news. And her presentation today will be about talking to kids about frightening and disturbing topics in the news, and we have them every day. Karen.
Sure. Thank you all for having me here. I do research violence in the media. Some of my research is on things like entertainment media, like video games and movies, and how do we react when we are consuming or playing things that are bloody and graphic and negative and aggressive. Another line of research is what I, and I'm happy to talk about that at the end, what I was going to focus on today is violence in the news, things that are real and have happened, and in particular how children react when they often inevitably are exposed to this. So why is this something even worth talking about? Hopefully I'll convince you that this is an important topic, or maybe you already agree. I'm going to talk a little bit about the prevalence of violence in the news, and what we know about how it affects children, and then some possible solutions parents, grandparents, anybody who's involved with a child can do moving forward if your child does become frightened. I should say a caveat up front. Most of the research that I'll be talking about comes from people who call themselves social scientists who do empirical studies using quantitative methods where they get these massive national samples of children and they interview them or they talk to them or they do experiments, and based on the averages they make conclusions. And social science is very helpful, but it cannot answer all of our questions, right? So questions having to do with your values and your morals are things that science cannot address. So I'm going to tell you what the science says about the questions that science is equipped to answer, and then we can talk at the end about, well, does this apply to my child? Does this, do I have different values than what these studies are showing, if that makes sense? So the most recent event that kind of sparked interest in this topic and led to this topic talk today was the recent tragedy at the Sandy Hook School. This was a difficult news event for adults to process and comprehend and even really understand why this happened. And that it involved children in a place where they're supposed to be safe really raises the question of how do you, you know, for most of us, children in our lives, we're not directly involved in this, but if you see and hear about it, and how is this going to affect them? How do you talk? And I have a 7-year-old and a 1-year-old boy, both the boys, and the conversation that I inevitably decided I did have to have with the 7-year-old about this was very difficult. And many of you may be experienced one thing with your children and grandchildren. That's just one event. You know, in recent years, it seems like there have been many major catastrophes. These news events that dominate the news cycle for days, if not weeks, the imagery we can't avoid. They're on the newspaper as it's thrown in your front lawn, and when you turn on the TV, even to watch something non-news related, they may say, coming up tonight at 10, an update on such and such. And it is hard to have your children avoid seeing these. Some of these are self-explanatory. We've got the start of the Iraq War, the tsunami, Hurricane Katrina. Fortunately, major catastrophes like this are somewhat rare, but even the everyday news, you know, it's not a happy place always. You've probably heard the saying, if it bleeds, it leads, and you may be feeling in your gut. It really seems like the news is so violent that it's just shootings and kidnappings and negative things. And if you feel that way in your gut, I can tell you that scientific research supports what you're feeling, that people that do what's called a content analysis, where they get a representative sample of the news and they come up with coding schemes, they define what is violence, what is negative, and they have concluded that violence in the news is on the rise, and in particular, and children today are growing up in a very different environment.
Yeah.
That's a really good question. That's a good point of clarification. The stats that violence is on the rise is for the television news. And I'm almost positive it's the for-profit news. It wouldn't include the not-for-profit.
Okay, like PBS.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's your regular big three networks and cable networks. Television is on the rise. I haven't seen any studies about whether print violence on the print is on the rise or in the internet. So this would just apply to television. And the kids today are growing up in a different environment than what I grew up in terms of the ability to be surrounded by these things all the time, right? So you've got multiple 24-hour news networks that have to have a news cycle that's ongoing. You've got the internet, so a child could be doing their homework and just click on something and see something that you may not want him or her to see, whether it has to do with violence and news or other things out there that you don't want your children to see. Now, you might be asking, well, do children really watch the news? I mean, is a six-year-old going to sit down and click on Brian Williams and sit there and watch it? It's not. Some do. I'm sure some do. There's different studies that I've tried to get at how often is it that children see the news, and it depends on when the numbers vary. This first stat, have you ever, was a study that I did in 2007, and so since the question is have you ever watched the news, the number's really high. 84% of kids 5 to 10 said, yeah, I've seen it at some point. A 1990s poll asked kids of roughly the same age, well, did you see it yesterday? And 65% said yes, I've seen it yesterday. And exposure decreases with age, so a 12-year-old tends to see it more than a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. You still might be wondering, why do kids watch the news? Well, a lot of it is accidental exposure. They don't sit down with the intention of seeing the news, but maybe studies that I've done indicate that kids will say, well, I was just watching my show and they interrupted with some kind of breaking news story. A lot of it, though, has to do with background television. The average household in this country has a TV on for 6 hours a day. 6 hours. And a third of kids under the age of 6 live in a household that has a TV set on all or most of the time. So a lot of this exposure to the news is accidental. The parents have it on while they're cooking dinner or while they're doing something and assume maybe that the children don't really care or paying attention, but kids are noticing, I think, maybe more than parents might think what's going on. All right, so I want to make the case that there is evidence that this exposure to the news, the main effect that it has on kids that we're going to talk about today of fear and feelings of fear and anxiety. And we can debate the degree to which we should be really concerned about this or just a little bit concerned. Is a little bit of fear and anxiety healthy and okay? And at what point does it get problematic? These are just some stats. So it depends again on when you do the study. The first two bullet points here were in responses to actual news events, news crises. The first one is the second Iraq War. The first one is the first one. Those were phone surveys of parents saying, hey, has your child been frightened by something that he or she has seen on the news about the war? And roughly 45 to 50% of parents are saying, yeah, my kid has gotten frightened. And they're reporting symptoms like not able to fall asleep at night, having nightmares, having to come and sleep in mom and dad's room when people don't know, just kind of being anxious and acting a little strange. I did a study once where I said, have you ever been frightened by something in the news? Kids aged K through fifth grade, and about 35% of them said yes and could tell me what it was that they'd seen and how they reacted to it. An important thing to know is that there are some really robust developmental patterns in terms of who gets frightened by the news and by what. And study after study after study shows that it's older kids who are more likely to get scared of the news than younger kids. And when I say older kids, I'm talking about maybe 7 and 8 and older, whereas the younger kids under 7 are much less likely. So this was a study that compared older kids to younger kids, and it asked, when you see the news on TV, how do you feel? And this reflects the percent that just spontaneously said scared and frightened. It's not a huge percent in any case, but you do see a big difference between the older and the younger kids. Other studies have asked on a 1 to 3 scale, how scared is the news? So they measure it in different ways. But the really robust finding is that the older kids are more likely to say, yeah, I get really frightened when I see the news, than say a 4 or 5-year-old. And one of the main reasons why is that older kids understand what the news is. This study asked kids, hey, have you heard of the news? Yeah, well, can you tell me about what the news is? And so this is older kids, this is younger kids, and this is the percentage that mentioned something along the lines of the news tells you what's going on in the world, it tells you what's happening in your city or in the world. And you can see that 80% of the kids who are 8 and older are understanding that. When you ask the younger kid what the news is, they'll just say, it's a TV show, it's like Scooby-Doo. That was truly one of the answers. It's like Scooby-Doo. no younger kids who are under the age of seven, their understanding of reality versus fantasy is very different than ours, right? These are the kids that write letters to Santa Claus and visit Santa Claus, and if they go to Disney World, they might wait in line for hours to meet the real Winnie the Pooh, right? So for young kids, Barney is just as real as you are. So for them, the difference between the news and Scooby-Doo is not, it's just another thing or another type of programming that's giving people information. But older kids understand. They understand that this is really happening somewhere, and so it makes sense that they would be more likely to become frightened by it. There's also very robust patterns in terms of what it is in the news that scare kids. Younger children, again, that kind of under seven or under group, they are very concrete thinkers. They focus on what you can see and what you can hear. And so they are frightened by striking visual images. A twister, a mangled car, a plane that's landed in the water, this shooter. So they are really frightened by things that they see. My son was, I think, 4 or 5 when this Hudson plane incident occurred, which we all know was a happy ending. It was a really inspirational story. But I was working overtime to keep him from seeing that picture, because I did not want my child to see that image of a plane in the water and people standing on the dunes. Even though I could tell them, oh, happy ending, everything's fine, I knew what would stay with him was that picture. And it was hard for him to avoid seeing it. Older kids can think more abstractly, and they can start thinking about their own vulnerability. So they tend to be more frightened by interpersonal violence, shootings, burglaries, robberies, kidnappings. The more abstract issues, the idea that, you know, is there a group of people out there that don't like the way of life and might be angry. This kind of just depicts this developmental pattern. So on the bottom horizontal x-axis there, you have the age of the child, kindergarten, second, fourth, sixth grade. And then up here, you have the percentage saying, yes, I've been frightened by this on the news. And so the red line is stranger violence, shootings, kidnappings, and the yellow line is natural disasters. So you can see for kindergartners, much more likely to say, I'm afraid of a tornado or a tsunami than a shooting, but that dramatically goes down as they get older. Younger kids, not as concerned about the kidnappings and the shootings, but as time goes on, that's what they start to become frightened of. So all of this research has kind of documented some of the effects of seeing disturbing things on the news and what some of the symptoms are that parents report or children report having. The most common are sleep disturbances, so being unable to fall asleep, having nightmares, being afraid of certain things, like I'm afraid to go on planes, I'm afraid to play in the front yard, obsessive thinking about something they've seen in the news, tummy aches. After the Challenger explosion and 9/11, some studies documented actual PTSD symptoms in children, primarily on the East Coast, because both of those events involved the East Coast. 9/11, obviously, Challenger, because Kristen McCoy, the astronaut, was from the East Coast, and it had gotten a lot more attention out there, and a lot of kids out there were watching it in the classroom.
Well, my daughter was watching it in her classroom in Illinois. I mean, they were all gathered in front of the TV.
I think that happened around the country. You're right. I think you're right. Because you're right. I grew up in Illinois, and my classroom also happened. I couldn't hold sick that day. But I know that they were watching it. I do think on the East Coast that they had talked about it more.
The teacher in school also, right?
Exactly, yeah. Absolutely. This teacher was so exciting. She was a major celebrity, and it was really exciting. And, you know, can you imagine being a teacher with your whole classroom all excited, and that happens, and kind of explain it? The PTSD. It's very good.
It wasn't just young kids, I would just
like, absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. We all, as 9/11 in particular, we all experience trauma from these. And I should say that the PTSD symptoms, so that's post-traumatic stress disorder, those are really severe fear and anxiety feelings. They weren't that, in the study on Challenger, it was a handful of kids in their study that they said were experiencing PTSD, which involved things like in their classroom for weeks and weeks when they would draw their pictures and review pictures of planes or shuttles exploding up. When they're in their free play, they would act it out. 9/11, I think the PTSD was among children more commonly challenged. So some of these we can say, okay, if my kid's a little frightened for a couple of nights, how bad is that? PTSD, I think we can agree, is universal. You know, we don't want to try to prevent that in our children. This is just some research.
Sure.
Some feedback, yeah,
sure.
Thank you.
Okay, so if I use this, is this better? Perfect, okay. This is a study that I did trying to document some long-term effects. I did a survey of grown-ups, adults, and asked them, can you remember as a child seeing a news story that frightened you so much that you couldn't recover for days? And about 50% said, yeah, I can remember one specific thing, and they all listed what it was. This was young, these were college students, so many of us were adults when these things occurred, but they were children. And so these were the events that they mentioned. I remember seeing this. And I asked them to describe how they reacted and how they felt. And these are just a sampling of some of the quotes. I remember tornadoes. I remember a robbery. I responded by staying in my parents' bedroom for a few nights to sleep. I saw stories about shootings and fires, and I always thought they were going to happen to me or my family. The last one, I remember shootings and robberies around the Milwaukee area. My dad was watching the news, and I would sneak in and watch it when they didn't know. And I was always freaked out for weeks after I saw one of those stories, thinking I was going to get killed or somebody was going to break into my house. So there's evidence that the violence on television in particular is on the rise. Children do see it, often accidentally, and they often experience fright reactions to what they see. And some of these reactions, I think we can argue, are severe and somewhat enduring, and others may not be severe or enduring. So the question is, what do we do? Okay, so one thing that I always recommend is that we need to monitor our TV use in our household. Know what your children, your grandchildren, your nieces, or know what they're watching. And that's really important, regardless of whether we're talking about news and fear. My recommendation is always to minimize background, you know, the use of television as background noise. I know that's hard, though, you know, especially for a stay-at-home mom. I remember I stayed home for a couple of years, and sometimes the TV is like your connection to people in reality, and it makes you feel comfortable. So I know that sometimes executing these are harder than they seem on the surface. But I do personally try to minimize TV on as just background noise, because you just never know what people are going to stumble upon. Monitoring your older children's internet use. Most experts recommend that all computers be in some kind of public area, you know, in an office or living room that everybody can walk by, rather than letting them do it in their own bedroom privately. Again, you know, every child is different, and everybody should do its best knowing what you know about your own children. But if it's in a public space, you could just more easily monitor what they're doing. But no matter what you do, inevitably your children are going to see things that you perhaps hope that they didn't see. And in the case of the news, they may end up getting frightened. And so what the experts recommend is that you enact what would be called a coping strategy, which is basically a strategy that you undertake to help your child calm down and feel better. Okay, so what are appropriate coping strategies? Well, kind of along the theme of what I've been saying is that it varies based on the age. There's some strong, again, developmental trends and what works and what doesn't work. And how you talk to your child should really reflect the age and the developmental level of your child. For young children, if they become frightened by something on the news or something fictional on television, like The Wizard of Oz, or they happen to see Jaws, or something terrible, it really doesn't help to try to rationalize or reason with them. If you try to explain things to them, a lot of studies have shown that those efforts boomerang and end up with the child being more frightened. Because your intent, what you intend in that conversation may not be what that child is pulling away. He or she might be pulling out certain things that are really standing out in their mind, and in your goal and your intent may not come through. So what the experts suggest is for younger children, again, 7-ish and under, to use what they call non-cognitive strategies. So not rationalizing, not reasoning, but things like just simple hugging and snuggling and distraction and avoidance. So the younger kids can be somewhat easily distracted sometimes, right? You see something that's disturbing, but you change the channel quickly to something else, you get them distracted, and they may forget. With an older child, that's not gonna work, but that might work for a younger child. And then avoidance. My advice in the response to the Sandy Hook incident was that the younger children, if you could avoid them hearing about this event, to do so, that there's just no reason to try to explain to a four-year-old what has happened and why. Again, you will want to consider your own child, but you could still try to keep your children safe and give them strategies for being safe without them having to know about that event. So my recommendation for younger children with the Sandy Hook in particular was try to avoid them seeing or hearing anything about this. Older kids, you may want them to avoid hearing or seeing anything about it, but my thoughts about my own 7-year-old, who was kind of on the cusp between these two at this break, and I wasn't sure how to handle the Sandy Hook, my conclusion was I think that he's going to hear about it on the playground, and people are going to be talking. Maybe his teacher would even talk about it. And so I wanted to tell him in advance what had happened as briefly as I could so that he wouldn't feel like I had hid something from him and that he was not in the know. Now, for the older kids, then, if they become nervous and scared by something like this, these non-cognitive strategies aren't going to work, right? Just simply hugging them or snuggling for a 9-year-old just isn't going to do it. So you do want to try to talk to them and help them understand. But the question is, what do you say? What do you say to them? You can't say, oh, it's just pretend it's not real, because it is real. You could talk about probability, the likelihood of this happening to them, but I know the probability of my child being involved in something like this is low, but I'm still scared. So trying to talk about the likelihood and probability is probably not going to work. So what most experts have suggested is that you try to help your child feel like they're in control, feeling like there is a plan in place, and if there isn't, let's make a plan, right? And this can be in reaction to any kind of disaster or bad thing they may see on the news. So what I talked to my child about was, here are all the things that are in place at your school to protect you. Here are all the things that Madison does to prevent these types of things. If it's a kidnapping story, okay, here's what we do in our family, here's our strategy for what you're going to do if a stranger approaches you. If your child's afraid of a natural disaster, well, we have a tub, a disaster preparedness kit in our house that's got batteries and a radio and supplies. You know, just making your child feel like, yes, some bad things could happen, but we're prepared, we are ready, we know what we're going to do, so it doesn't have to feel so chaotic and hopeless. Now, I'm not suggesting you have all these conversations at once and terrify your child. You know, maybe it's a reaction to a news event that you say, okay, here's how we're going to do to protect us for this particular news event. Maybe periodically you want to have this kind of safety talk about, here are things that we do in various situations. It's really important to respect your child's emotional response. If your child does become frightened by something they see on the news, it's really let them express that and don't minimize it or make them feel bad in any way. You know, respect it and let them feel what they're feeling. But don't escalate it yourself, you know. And that was a tricky thing with the Sandy Hook situation, because I was so emotional myself, I didn't want to convey to him that this was even more serious than he was even thinking. So as the adult, you have to remain kind of calm and rational and not escalate the child's feeling, but respect what the child is feeling. And then hopefully maybe reassure them with some kind of plan for whatever it is that's frightening him or her. I said in the beginning, you know, there are some questions that science just can't answer, our judgment calls. A lot of my advice involves shielding, you know, turn the TV off, or, you know, keep the TV away from your child. And so you might wonder, well, I don't want to shield my child from reality. You know, I want my child to be aware that there are people in the world that might do harm. I feel like my child should see what's going on. And if that's how you feel, I understand that. And that's a judgment call, you know, that every family needs to make for themselves. How scared is too scared? A lot of people, when I talk about this, say, well, you know, I was frightened of things when I was a kid, and I got over it, you know? So why do we need to make such a big deal out of this? So again, you know, you need to think about, okay, is a certain amount of healthy anxiety in your child what you think is okay to help them be safe? And then at what point do you feel like, okay, I've gotten to a point where I need to, you know, really step in. Some people say, okay, well, you're kind of suggesting we should avoid the news, but the news in many formats can be very educational, and so, you know, I don't want to minimize my child's exposure to the news, even if there are bad things, because he or she might learn about the world. But again, I think that that's very valid. You know, the overarching thing is that you know your child, your grandchild, your niece or nephew, the children in your life, you know them better than any expert or social scientist. And so these data are based on big national patterns, but your child may not be like the average 4-year-old or the average 9-year-old. So you really need to, you know, monitor your children in light of that. So for example, if your child is very high in empathy that feels things very deeply, you may need to work harder to try to protect them. But if you have a child that's very rational and kind of can handle these kinds of things, then you would handle that child in a different way. So I welcome any, I'd love to discuss this further and take any questions, and I think maybe this is a good point to open it up for discussion. Yeah, I absolutely agree. Because it seems like a lot of these situations did arise from that, a person that didn't quite fit in and hasn't been treated right, and also maybe was mentally ill, and that's what led to this. I have to admit that's out of my area of expertise. Other than okay, what from my area of expertise would be what role would the media have in this, and I do think that the media play a role in terms of bullying, in terms of a lot of the shows, the entertainment shows are out there that kind of promote what we call relational aggression, kind of like being mean and calling people names. It's a different type of aggression than physical aggression, but this culture of not being nice, I think, is perpetuated by the media, and I think it's something that, as a parent, you have to make sure that your kids aren't watching things that reinforce not being nice to people, and that you and your family need to, you know, talk about these things, and the schools need to do a better job of stopping this as well. Absolutely, and that's a really good point that I didn't mention, that the people most vulnerable to not only violent news stories, but in particular violent entertainment, video games, movies, are people who are already aggressive in their personalities, who come from low socioeconomic backgrounds. Males are more affected, and people that have prior experience with violence and aggression, have kind of violence and aggression in their world, are more affected. So absolutely, that happens. Absolutely. Yeah, I definitely, the research shows that the younger kids in particular who are so affected by the striking visuals are going to be more affected by a visual medium. What's interesting is the 9/11 study I referenced, though, that looked at PTSD symptoms, found the most severe symptoms from the children who learned and got most of their news from the internet, more than television, more than the other media that they looked at, which is interesting. It's a different internet app. It's a different internet in 2011 or 2001 than it is now, so I don't know if that would uphold. But that was a really unexpected finding. So I think we have a lot to learn. There aren't a lot of studies that compare medium effects, and should be. But I think we can assume that, especially for the younger kids, anything that's visual is going to be especially powerful. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I did spend most of the time talking today about the news. We could spend hours talking about entertainment media. And desensitization, I think, is one of the most fascinating areas of research. And the findings are really remarkable, that when you watch media entertainment, and then you are, so this is how these studies will unfold sometimes. So the kids will watch entertainment media that's violent, and some kids won't. And then they're put in a situation right afterwards that they think is real, where they see other kids fighting and punching each other, and they think it's real, but it's really just actors. And they look at how long it takes the kids to react and respond and do something. And the kids that have just watched a violent movie are much slower to respond than the kids that have not. They take much more longer time before they go and get help. This idea that it's not as big of a deal, that they've been desensitized. You know, you're not alone. The people are starting to look at the social nature of video game play and the contextual factors beyond just whether or not it's violent or not. And have found, because there are, video games are fabulous tools for learning. They respond to the player, and they get progressively harder, and it's interactive. They're wonderful tools for learning. So the question is, what are they learning? In a violent game, that might not be what you want them to learn. But what's good about these big social gaming experiences is that you're working with a guild sometime, and you're communicating, and you're working together, and you're strategizing with other people, and that there are some positive effects of that.
Thanks so much. Our closing words will be read by Heidi Hughes.
A child seldom needs a good talking to as a good listening to. Robert Bolt.
Thank you all for coming. Please extend the hand of friendship to those around you, then join us for coffee and conversation and the meeting afterwards.